Welcome back to Hoops HQ, college basketball fans. We are, as we record this, about 15 hours from the start of the college basketball season. It is time, yes. David.
If you go to the countdown, the days say zero. There is less than a day. We will, like, we're less than, we're 15 hours away from just a complete onslaught of college basketball. I can't wait. Basketball's back. It's, oh, what? Wait, what the hell are you doing here?
What?
I don't want to be around Chad.
Yeah, around 12:30 or so on Tuesday afternoon, the first game, and about 12:45, we're all going to be watching, realizing that we're watching Wisconsin Lutheran and Green Bay, and realizing that we're really still a few hours from real games. But
yeah, Green Bay is pretty bad. Lutheran has a chance.
I'm Chad Sherwood. We've got David Griggs. We've got John Stalica down below, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, and Joey Fortson with us. This is our final preseason podcast, and it is our preseason bracket show. So this is a pretty fun one. What we've done in this show is I've gone ahead and I've been posting my conference previews on the website for the last month or so. I've taken those picks and gone ahead and ranked the teams that I've picked to make the field from 1 through 68, created a bracket with it. And I'm going to reveal that bracket and let you guys just, you know, tell me how right I am.
You're not right. Oh. I haven't even seen it, but I just know you're wrong.
And, you know, as we go through each line, I'll get comments from each of you, and we'll go from there. We'll talk all about, also discuss teams that I did not put in that you guys think will make the field. We'll discuss final four picks at the end of the show as well. Does that cover everything?
I think it does. I can't think of what it doesn't cover. I think you covered it all.
Well, let me also just throw out there that there is zero science to preseason picks, in my opinion. Rocco, you do a preseason bracket also. Is there any science at all to doing your preseason picks? Or?
I think, you know, there's no real science to it. I try to absorb as much as I can. I feel like the more information I take on, the harder it gets, because you just overanalyze every conference, almost every team, and it makes it even tougher.
Nobody's played yet.
And the difference between who is a 3 seed and who is a 4 seed is kind of like, okay, yeah, sure, let me flip a coin, because at the end of the season, we could argue these with objective data to back up our arguments. Right. Which is one of the reasons why I really don't believe in making brackets until around January, other than this preseason one.
Well, I'll be making one Sunday.
I know you will.
Based on merit. Yeah, Joby just muted himself. I think he was going to say something about Wagner, but
Wagner is a 1 seed.
If they win their game, they might be. I rank them by merit, not by how good I think they are. It's the opposite of Kinbaum. All right.
If you guys all see it, we have a blank bracket up on the screen right now. So first of all, David, your thoughts on the bracket today?
Good looking bracket. So How do I get the full screen mode off here? It has taken over my entire screen. Okay. I'll exit full screen. There we go. Okay, now it's all. Okay, now I can see you all again. Actually, put the full screen back up.
What I'm going to do is go ahead and show you guys who I think my 4-1 seeds are.
I'm in preseason form right now. I can't even remember how to work the board.
There they are. My top 4 seeds heading into the season are in this order: Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, and Gonzaga.
Chad, I really admire how you went out on a limb here and picked the top 4 teams in the poll. Really good stuff right there.
Rocco, any disagreement with me?
I have one disagreement. So I have, instead of Duke in that number 3 position, I have Virginia, Joby's boys. Nobody likes to predict them at this time of year, but I'm not making that mistake for the third year in a row. I'm going to put them as the ACC champion. And I do think there are 3 legitimate big-time contenders between Virginia, Duke, and North Carolina to win the league. Whoever does that will get the third number 1. And I do like Kentucky, Kansas as top 2. I have them reversed, but I think we're kind of splitting hairs on that. And I also have Gonzaga 4.
My disagreement is going to be as far as location goes with Gonzaga. Officially, they have, I think on the NCAA website, they have San Jose listed as a first-round site now, not Seattle, so – take from that what you will.
Yes. John is correct.
Oh, the games are not in Seattle this year.
Correct, because they are remodeling Key Arena for the new hockey team.
All right. And my apologies. When you see Seattle again later, you can read San Jose there. That is something that I missed. And thank you guys for picking up on that for me. I'll get that fixed.
Why the hell are they playing in – can't they play in the Dome or whatever the hell – anyway.
The King Dome has long since been
wherever the don't they play in a closed roof? Or, don't they have something there where the with a roof on it?
Can't they play where the Seattle Pilots play baseball? I mean,
really? Safeco Field has a roof on it, but then you know there'd be it'd be pretty chilly for the fans in still in March.
Let's go ahead and also show the two seat this the two line.
Interesting that all of the one seeds are playing on Friday there.
And Joby, let me throw this over to you. I have the other two ACC teams that were mentioned already, Carolina and Virginia. I also have Villanova and Nevada up there in the two line.
I mean, Nevada's your risk here. I personally think there are going to be four teams that, and this goes back to the one seed, there are going to be four teams that run away, at least in the regular season, that are in the equivalent of a Power Five in the major conferences. And because they're going to get such huge gaps in their conference, I actually – and their conferences are decent. I actually think they're your number ones, Kansas being one, Kentucky being one. Another one is Villanova, who, by the way, in a, it's just a scrimmage, did beat Virginia in the scrimmage by all accounts. The other one you have not listed yet. And – in our HD preseason podcast, it was pretty consensus-driven that Michigan State was going to win by two or three games in the Big Ten. And the Big Ten is much better and deeper than it was last year. I think Tom Izzo does what he always does, gets that one seed. But the real discussion here is Nevada, obviously. And they have the talent. I don't say, you know, it's, hey, do you think what it deserves or do you think what the committee is going to do? I don't know. And I don't know – I have to be honest, I don't know Nevada's out-of-conference schedule well enough, but I don't think they're going to get the opportunities like Gonzaga usually schedules to be able to get past a Michigan State – let's take that out – Michigan State that could win the Big Ten by two or three games.
Well, I'll tell you what here. We actually I could do this already here. I can put up Nevada's schedule for us.
That'd be great.
Let's go ahead and take a quick look at that. Yeah. If this works, David. There we go. Right here, you see they start with BYU. Yeah,
look at all those teams. That is a tough schedule. Everybody in the RPI.
I mean, they got the Lopes.
Wow.
Games against Arizona State on a neutral court at USC, at Utah State, at New Mexico is going to be a pretty good team also in there.
I truly believe, as the cliche goes, that will fail. That ain't going to feed the Bulldog.
What?
You know? I mean, I don't see – They're almost like these poor one conference teams. They can't slip up in conference sort of thing. They're going to have that throughout the whole season, how a lot of us feel about the Vermonts of the world during championship week.
Maybe, but Joby's right in one sense, but in another thing, with the efficiency rankings and all these other things going into the NET, wouldn't you think Nevada's efficiency rankings would be through the roof because of the weaker schedule? And it seems like there's been an effort to kind of identify how good of a team is despite their schedule. Now, again, I don't know. It's kind of our first rodeo with this. And a lot of people on the committee aren't exactly numbers crunchers.
Yeah, but David,
I think one of them.
It's not as much. I truly believe this. And this is part of the formula that, the Joby nitty gritty that I put together. It really, the RPI before, and I believe the net going forward, it's not as much about your net, your RPI. I mean, Southwest Missouri State's, sitting with a 17, and we all knew they weren't going to make the tournament that year.
Yeah.
It's not about yours. It's about your opponents. And I think that the efficiency ranking in those Power Five conferences are going to rack up your Q1, Q2. Your quartile ranking.
Yeah. Okay. But it'll just be interesting to see. I think Nevada is really good. It wouldn't shock me if they finish ranked in the top 10. Well, they're starting in the top 10, so why would it shock anyone that they finish there? They're going to be favored in virtually every game that they play. Now, I don't think they're going to win them all, but, I mean, they could have 29-30 wins heading into the NCAA tournament. I mean, they are super good.
They're good. They'll be a protected seed. I just wonder – when I see, and I'm picking on it. Maybe it's North Carolina that slips up because I'm not as much of a believer in Carolina as Chad here, as our ACC guy. I don't think Carolina wins the ACC. I think Little's great, et cetera. I think it's going to come down. I think they're going to be in the running, but it's really going to be Duke, Virginia that fights it out. And I actually think the Blue Devils as Chad puts out here, are going to be the eventual winners. But probably it'll be a split. You probably won't see the sweep. You probably won't see the regular season sweep. And then postseason sweep.
Yeah.
Well, Sleek, let me bring you in here and throw out four more teams. This will be the three line. Should be coming up here in a second. And there they are. There is the Michigan State team that we mentioned, along with Auburn, Tennessee, two more teams for the SEC, and the second Big 12 team there, Kansas State. Your thoughts on these four?
It looks like it's going to be an SEC party in the city of Jacksonville with Tennessee and Auburn, and also some interesting games as far as the city of Tulsa goes, hosting both of the Kansas schools. I guess it's going to be a little bit closer for, I think, Kansas, for example, to Tulsa as opposed to Des Moines, which is somewhat equidistant, but wouldn't also be surprised to see Michigan State eventually play their way into a Columbus pod.
Yeah, and David, how about these teams? You think I blew it with any of these teams, or you think we've got the top 12 here?
You probably did blow it, but we'll sort that out after. All right. So, I mean, like you said, there isn't a whole lot of science to this. I really like this Tennessee team. I don't think you have them overseeded. I know that that's probably about where they are in the rankings, but I mean, for the SEC has three teams that could end up as protected. Well, you got them all out there, like them and Auburn, but I actually think I like Tennessee a little bit better than Auburn.
Yeah. Well, and Rocco, I think where we're going to start, you guys are really going to start disagreeing with me, is beyond these three lines, because I think these top 12 teams are kind of almost nationally a consensus of that big group here. But here comes the four seeds right now. And due to some type of problem, only one team showed up. Let me try that again. We do see Cincinnati there. Let's try again. Let's see if we get three more to go with them. There we go. Along with UCLA, who is my pick for the Pac-12 champion. Wow. And the reason they're in the protected seed is because I want to give a protected seed to the Pac-12 champion.
Oh, well,
they're
good
my
job.
Pick to win All it. Right, yes, I've also got another SEC team in Mississippi State and another Big 12 team in TCU there.
Good, Chad. So there's some – I have a couple issues. Just, you know, of course, it's all preseason and hypothetical right now. But I think just with some of the problems UCLA is facing right now, I'm having a hard time putting them that high. They certainly have the talent to get there if they can patch things up quickly. I think Cody Riley last week broke his wrist, so he'll be out a few weeks on top of everything else they've experienced. So really hard for me to envision that today, but things change quickly. And then the Cincinnati choice, I think that's probably a little too high for them. I think Mick Cronin's an incredible coach, but this roster without Clark and some others that left last year, it doesn't look nearly as strong as last year, and I think they would be they're going to have a hard time winning their own conference. And I don't think the winner of the AAC, no matter who you pick, is going to be a protected seed. But that's just my take.
But by the same token, when you have out-of-conference games like Ohio State, Xavier, and UCLA, the opportunities are certainly going to be there for Cincinnati.
They always seem to finish higher than what they're projected to start. I don't remember where they were ranked to start last year. I want to say it was in the 20s, and they ended up like up on the two line. Right. So they, and throughout their history, at least since Mick Cronin has been there, they seem to finish a lot higher than where they're being predicted to start. So I don't know if that's influencing Chad's decision or not, just based on recent history. But I do feel this. If Cincinnati gets a protected seed, they're losing in the round of 32.
Again, really, my thinking on Cincinnati is, yes, they are the – I project them as the American conference champion. I think there's still enough strength in that conference to push somebody up. But if they can win that conference by a game or two, maybe even pull off the double, winning the conference tournament also, it's tough for me to not see the American champion in the protected seed, at the bottom of the protected seeds, but in there. Right. But that was my thinking.
Which is less likely to happen, Chad? Cincinnati ending up as a one seed or Cincinnati winning a game in the round of 32 finally?
I'll put my money on Cincinnati as a one seed if I had a choice there.
Yeah.
No thought about Mississippi State being the fourth SEC?
Yeah, that is a very interesting one. I mean, it's too high for me, especially – Yeah, I don't know. You know, the SEC had a great year last year in terms of strength, you know, overall strength. Do we see a repeat? I'm thinking Kentucky's going to have more command of that conference. But yeah, I mean, a team like Tennessee certainly can jump up and buy them without a doubt. I'm not as big a believer in Auburn, to be honest. And Mississippi State, hey, they could make a run. I don't see Eric Dampier walking through that door right now, though, to lead them to the promised land like he did back then in the day. Yeah, Mississippi State, sure, and we'll see some more SEC teams in your bracket. I know.
What do you like about?
I don't see this. I don't to get so many. You have to have so many teams rack up wins against each other and against the rest.
What do you like so much about them? Everybody seems to be big on them. They're ranked really high to start the season. I mean, it's odd. It's not completely unheard of, but it is a little strange to see a team that missed the tournament entirely the year before start off ranked in the teens. Yet they're starting off in the teens.
Yeah. And they missed it. They weren't close.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we're talking about, well, St. Mary's is returning. Let's say St. Mary's was. Return everybody. They missed it by a game or two. Sure. Yeah, you know. But
yeah.
Sorry, I got a little screen problem here, but I think I got it fixed up.
Notre Dame was returning Bonzi Colson. Yeah, Notre Dame. Sure. Yeah.
But I would say with a pretty good backcourt as well as some decent frontcourt pieces like Eric Coleman, it might be reminiscent of Angry Frank's team a couple of years ago that came out of nowhere and actually went to the Final Four.
But as an 8 seed, so, you know.
Or seven, excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I see Mississippi State. And you're right. Guard play is so important, John. That's not to say – and this is all projection. We're all conjecture. But they are a team that's probably built for March a little bit more. But they're built for March to get a seed, I think you're going to have to be built throughout the whole year, like the other teams we've listed for the most part.
I just think that they have a very balanced team there. I mean, between the Weatherspoon brothers in the backcourt and guys like Holman and Adu and Reggie Perry, I just didn't see any holes in the Mississippi State lineup. That's what I like about them.
And real quick, we said we were doing this as we go along since we got the protected seats here. So some big games. We got Duke, Kentucky tomorrow. We've got Michigan State, Kansas tomorrow. Nobody else is. Big under the radar opportunity. I don't know if we're going to see Wofford in your bracket or not, but North Carolina going to Wofford tomorrow. Really good game. And if North Carolina doesn't win that game, I think they will. But in the event that they don't, I don't think that that's at all an indicator that they can't end up as high as a two.
Especially with their youth.
Yeah.
You know, Wofford's returning folks, they could easily pull that game off. Like, again, once, like you said, David, I'm not saying they will necessarily, but they did last year.
Yeah, they did.
Say they can't, in their home, do the same. Where is that game being played?
On campus. In that little band box they got.
So they did not, like, go to Columbia.
No. North Carolina will do this. Yeah, Virginia does it as well occasionally, but North Carolina will do this. They'll go on the road, you know, and play against a really good, by relatively speaking, mid-major team. They've done it before. They're doing it this year. So,
well, they've also got a trip to – not that it's going to – quite the level going to Wofford. They got a trip to Elon coming up the first week also. Carolina the first week is pretty darn impressive.
I believe both of those schools have new arenas, so that's part of the reason why they're going there.
Right. Yeah, Wofford, I think, opened last year. Elon's opening it this season.
Yeah, Wofford opened last year against South Carolina.
And it is interesting because you mentioned Virginia. Virginia, for instance, is going – relatively early on to Angry Frank. And you could see the reason why. Where are Duke and North Carolina going? If Virginia happens to jump those guys into the top two of the ACC, where will they go on the subway? Right. They'll be playing in Columbia, South Carolina.
And that Virginia doesn't have a purposeful thing. Yeah, oh, sorry to cut you off. But Virginia doesn't have a game like this year, I don't think. But they've gone to George Washington. They've gone to Old Dominion. They've gone to –
Where's VCU? Is VCU on the road this year? Or is it
I stand corrected. I think they are going to VCU.
Yeah, yeah.
So they'll play – not that VCU is a mid-major, but they'll play the really good regional teams from outside the Power Five. And they've occasionally been beaten. Green Bay got them a couple years ago. Yeah. GW got him a couple years ago, but they still ended up as a two or a one.
So. A one seed when GW bit him. And GW ended up missing the tournament, actually.
Yeah. So.
Virginia, you see they've actually got VCU at home this year. They're at Maryland.
And at Maryland for the Big Ten Challenge. And Middle Tennessee State starts the Atlantis tournament.
Right. So. Which is basically a bye this year.
Yeah.
But Virginia should cruise to the final of that, but it'd be great to see them. I think they can either play Wisconsin or they'll get a pretty good game in the final if chalk holds.
Well, the good news is from that schedule, while it's not the, you know, Atlantis, Maryland, South Carolina is not awful. It's not like Virginia's being road warriors this year, but at least the games they have at home, the bye games are not awful games. I mean, William and Mary's, you know, William and Mary's a pretty good team. VC
this year they're exceptionally good.
Yeah, exactly. GW is a strong team to have as your bye game. Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of just complete fat on that, you know, on that.
The Marshall game also circled that one. That's a pretty good Marshall team.
Yeah.
Coppin State and Morgan State aside.
The Marshall game is great because it's a team that doesn't play defense against a team that doesn't do anything but play defense. So,
good point.
Yeah, also, of course, we've got the Champions Classic. You know, I mean, two of our one seeds are playing each other, and a one seed is playing a team that Joby thinks should be a two seed, and it's tomorrow night to opening day.
I think Michigan State should be a one seed. I'm dead serious when I say that.
So you think four one seeds are playing tomorrow in the Champions Classic?
I do. I really do.
Michigan State finally, you know, they learned from last year. They've got the schedule again this year to get a one seed if they win enough games. So yeah,
they learned.
Really tough schedule.
Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and take a look at the teams that just missed my protected seeds here. David, let me bring you in on these. I'm going to get a lot of flack on the one in the Midwest, but Vatek, West Virginia, and Florida is the other three.
West Virginia, the other night or the other afternoon, I should say, losing a home charity game to Penn State. But again, West Virginia has a tendency, and even Cincinnati before that, to not play well in exhibition games. And you kind of almost wonder, is that by design? Not that Bob Huggins wants to lose, but sometimes I think he does things. He's more concerned about working on their weaknesses than he is going to the strengths to try to win the game. So I don't read anything into that at all, that they didn't beat Penn State. This is about – I'm kind of high on them. I typically am. This is about where I'd have them. Interesting about Virginia Tech, we were really big on them when we were talking the ACC a few weeks ago, but they've lost a key player due to a suspension, I think, or was he kicked out of school?
It's an indefinite suspension.
Yeah, it's an indefinite suspension, but not in the Grayson Allen version of an indefinite suspension.
That's Chris Clark, by the way, for that.
Yeah, and he's probably their best – man-to-man defender, and he can play both guard and forward, and in the defensive realm he's a little more of near the basket offensively, but he runs the floor well. That's a loss. But they're deep, and I still believe that even with that loss, I'm tempted them or a team I'm sure Shad will have very soon, coached by your favorite coach Jim Boeheim. Either of them will be the fourth team after the big three.
And that's what I was looking at here was the fourth team. Rocco, another interesting game tomorrow night that nobody's really been talking about, but Florida State opening night also.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. I'm actually higher on Florida than most. I don't know if it's going to happen overnight because, you know, Nembrand's going to be one of the best freshmen in the SEC, and they've got a couple key pieces back from last year. Obviously, a lot of people focusing on the loss of Chioza. How are they going to fill that gap? But Florida State, you know, with Leonard Hamilton last year, they were all over the map. They were hot, they were cold, and then got hot in the tournament. It'll be a big game just because it could go really any direction. I could see one of the two teams blowing each other out or it being a close game. Probably the most impossible game to predict, but no matter what happens, it's going to matter at the end of the year for seeding. So it'll be a game that we have to pay attention to closely.
Yeah, outside of Florida, you're right, Chad. No, I mean, I guess because of the Champions Classic, no one's really focusing on this, but this is a big game between two likely tournament teams. Yeah. And it's a big rivalry, it should be – I think they're all sold out. It should be a raucous atmosphere, and – whoever wins this, the committee's watching this. It will be factored into the selection process. So even though it's opening night, this one's big, really big.
And Sleek, I got to ask you about it. I threw your team in there in the five live, which is really a gut feeling for me that I think that everybody's underrating the Xavier team and that they've got a lot more and they've got a lot better coach than people are thinking. But what are your thoughts on me saying that Second of the Big East.
I think the interesting thing is Xavier could wind up playing like a five seed towards the end of the year, but I just think they're going to be too inconsistent throughout the year to actually warrant a five based on a whole body of work. One historical footnote, since the formation of the new Big East, the conference has had two protected seeds each year, where Villanova has done it all 5 years, and teams like Xavier, Creighton, Villanova, and Butler have taken turns as that second protected seed. I think there is a team that could end up as a five, but it's actually going to be Matt's team and Marquette, not the Musketeers this year.
I'm not nearly as high on that Marquette team as you are, but let me show you my six seeds. They should be coming up on the screen right about now. And, Joby, you mentioned Syracuse. Yeah. There they are, along with Oregon, Butler, and Wisconsin.
I'm glad you have Wisconsin, Chad. I'm higher than probably the average person on Wisconsin.
I like whiskey. I like
them. They missed the tournament last year. They stumbled out of the gates. Greg Gard was – I mean, despite doing a great job the year before, there was talk over his job a little bit, even in some circles. Wisconsin, I think they are the team – I think you're looking at the second-best team in the Big Ten this year, and I think they will – I actually think they have a chance to go up to the protected seed level, but I can't disagree where you have them right now 100% because we don't know. But I could see I think a three or four is not out of the question, depending how they play out of conference.
And I want to say I think it's going to be a week from tomorrow where Xavier is going to be hosting Wisconsin. So definitely pay attention to that game as far as who's going to be getting some early season momentum.
Well, Xavier, unfortunately, John, they're the first team that Chad has up here that I have actually missing the tournament. We will
drop
see
off.
Really, 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 really wrong pretty darn quick. Because obviously I'm high on Wisconsin and not on X.
You're not alone, Joby, because I think I've heard at one point Andy Katz, I think, had Xavier picked as low as eighth or ninth in the Big East.
Oh, that's
made a correction.
Well, if that's the case, I think Xavier is a five
sitting in that conference. How in the world can you come to that conclusion?
Rocco, what about my Pac-12 team in there, Oregon? I think you probably have them rated higher, don't you?
A little bit. I've got them, I think, 16 overall. So right, the last four seed. And I actually had them. I originally had them 17. I moved them up just to get them into the protected West spot. But I don't think you're too far off there. If the Pac-12 struggles like they do all the time in non-league, probably the first place team might end up number six or seven in that seed range. So not too big of an issue there. I actually have Syracuse right at a six as well. But, like Joby was saying, Xavier and Butler, I think you're a little ambitious on, just from my standpoint, from what we know today. They could easily outperform our expectations and get to this, so I don't have a huge issue overall. And then the Wisconsin pick is my first team that I've seen that I have just barely go into the NIT, and that's mainly because I'm not too thrilled about the Wisconsin schedule. In the Big Ten, they miss – a couple of the top teams. I think they only play once. So they could end up in a similar position. I don't think it's as bad, but almost a similar position as last year's Nebraska. But they had their chances at the Atlantis tournament. Like I said, even if they get to the final and lose to Virginia, I think that's still an impressive showing. So they'll have their chances there. But after that, I think they get a lot of cupcakes.
Yeah, and NC State, isn't the best. They could have drawn better.
The Xavier Marquette road games are in Western Kentucky are all solid.
It's a shame because now at Marquette that's going to be a showdown right
there.
Yeah,
it'd be big time. Yeah.
That's great because I while Chad's not as high on them, I would have, and I think Rocco, you mentioned it, I would have had Marquette already on this board. And so not saying they're protected seed yet or something, but I think this is the range where I would have thrown them in. That at Marquette, Wisconsin game is going to be, in-state, great stuff. And we're going to find out a lot about both teams on December 8th.
Yeah, and Rocco, what I think we say about their Big Ten schedule, you look Michigan State, Purdue once each, and they're both at home. So that doesn't really give them the chance in the conference for that big
game. Right. Yeah, and the other thing I didn't point out, but I looked at this a couple weeks ago, is, you know, those Coppin State, Grambling, Savannah State, Houston Baptist, all teams we love under the radar, really will hurt a resume like this if they end up near the bubble. So
those teams will.
Well, hey, they get.
I mean, I don't know. Those are the teams
really early in that 20-game schedule.
Right. Yeah. I mean, those are all 325 plus teams. So that can,
those are like, yeah. That those are almost centenary award teams.
David, I got to go for you here for the seven line. We just mentioned that Purdue team right there, well, and a team that you like is on the seven line also, David.
Well, I mean, again, and what jumps out to me about this is just how unfair that is to North Carolina. I mean, to get stuck playing that game in the round of 32. I mean, for them to have a big year, end up as a protected seed, and get knocked out in the round of 32. But yeah, Purdue, I actually like Purdue a little more. I like Washington. They're my pick to win the Pac-12, so I would certainly have a little higher than this. And Texas is interesting. I have more questions than answers about them. I certainly like Shaka Smart. I think that he's probably going to do better there before he's done than what he's done so far. But again, I could see them being higher than that, or I could see them not even making the tournament potentially, but it's interesting.
But as we also saw with Xavier, revenge is a dish that's best served cold. So this would be a prime opportunity for Texas to avenge their first round loss to Nevada last year. Nevada was actually the seventh seed, as opposed to Texas being 10. But nonetheless, the revenge factor would kick in here.
Yeah.
Well, it was mentioned on the Big 12 podcast, but even with the loss of Mo Bamba, I mean, we could see Texas actually gain from addition by subtraction this year. And as Chad has pointed out, with a 7 seed versus a 10, I actually like this Texas team. I think 7's pretty good spot for them, but I could see the ceiling is hinted at even be higher.
Right. Well, Rocco, let me throw the 8 line up here also, because we get halfway through the field, or almost halfway through the field. Florida State, LSU, and a couple of –
Wow.
This is a lot of fun. I like this. I'm actually going to root for this. But, yeah, I've got Florida State a little bit higher, and I think probably most people do. But we all know with Leonard Hamilton, they could completely miss the tournament. They sometimes just lose control of the team. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. LSU is an interesting one. Of course, they're dealing with the tragic loss of their teammate, and Tremont Waters is an incredible point guard. I think he might be the best point guard in the country. So that, you know how those things go. It could go either way. They could rally around it and end up way overperforming, or just have a really rough year. So I guess 8 seed's a good way to hedge that. Now, George Mason is very ambitious, I think. I like the team. I love the fact that they return all 5 guys. I think they return the entire roster for the most part. I don't think they lost anybody. So that could be good, but it's also a bunch of guys that haven't proven to be winners before. So they're going to have to get over that hump. And then Western Kentucky, I think a very strong roster. Some internal turmoil. I think they just had the point guard was arrested last week.
And, yeah, well, you know.
There's
no biggie.
They've got the schedule. They've got the schedule to get to the 8 line if they get a couple big wins. So I'm okay with it.
Now, another historical footnote is it applies to George Mason. The last time they made it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, they were also playing in D.C. at the phone booth at that point in time.
Would that be, because Mason is a suburb, it's in a suburb outside of D.C., are there rules that would come into play?
No,
they played in D.C. when they went to the Final Four, actually.
I mean, I just didn't know if there were new, protection rules, for high seed. Yeah.
The only time George Mason would have been ineligible was 1998, because they were actually the host institution in what was then the MCI Center. But every time they've the MCI/Verizon/Capital One Arena has hosted since then. Georgetown has been the host institution.
But Joe, I think what you're asking is about the fact that they're the 8 seed playing Duke, who's the 1 seed.
Right, and trust me, that crowd.
Well, actually, that game, Nation fans
are going to be not on Duke's side.
Well, that would still be in Columbia, actually. Anyhow, the Mason game. But the protection rules only apply for the first round, anyhow, David.
Right, and I got to ask you this because I thought you had St. Louis as your A-10 champion. I guess
no, I had Mason.
Oh, you had Mason. Okay. I must have confused the report with something else. I am actually with you on Western Kentucky. I don't know about anybody else on this line. I think I like Florida State a little more. But this Western Kentucky team, it seems about right as to how good I think they are. And, again, tomorrow, huge, huge game tomorrow that's going to determine whether or not they can probably get to the top half of the bracket or not, that game in Washington. I think if Western Kentucky wins that, it would probably end up being the biggest singular win on their profile. I don't have their schedule in front of me, but I think that would – like to win at Washington, a team that will most likely not lose many home games, that would be big. Well, so
Rocco should address that, you being a Washington guy. Thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough game. I think it's a really risky opener that the Huskies threw together last minute to try to get a stronger schedule. They actually threw in the Auburn game, too, on Friday. Did a last-minute home-and-home to really beef up the schedule. So it's risky. I think it'll. I think it's going to be a really tough game. I mean, Western Kentucky roster has got a lot of talent. They've had all camp to prepare and kind of dissect what the Huskies have coming back and. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a great game. I honestly do. I think it will come down to probably the last couple of minutes.
And I just want to note here, looking at the Western Kentucky schedule, you see it kind of run short there by a few games. The reason being the new Conference USA scheduling. After that February 16th game against UAB, they will then group all the teams into three different groups. So they will have their four final CUSA games will be against the other top four finishers in the conference at that point. So to kind of help beef up some of the power rating numbers, but they will likely get another game against a Marshall and whoever else is really good in the conference.
Old Dominion or someone like that.
And it has been a while since we've seen an under-the-radar school wearing white in the round of 32, but Western Kentucky might be good enough to do it. So.
And they already play Marshall twice, so there's also a distinct possibility they could have four games against the Thundering Herd in the regular season.
Yep, very possible.
Yeah, and so the other thing is they're playing in Myrtle Beach, and as long as they take care of Valpo in the first round, which is not an easy game, they'll likely get West Virginia in the second round, and then another pretty tough game on the third day, whether it be the final or the third place. And then they also go to Arkansas. They got St. Mary's and Wisconsin coming to their house. They go to Belmont. They go to Missouri State. It's a nice schedule.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Which is another reason why I have them rated so high. Rated
what about Mason's schedule? I don't want to disrupt the flow, but you know, does Mason have even close to the same number of opportunities? Yeah, because I'm not sold the A-10 is going to provide a ton of those.
There they are, and they don't quite have that level of opportunity. I'll agree with that, but I think that the A-10, your middle and bottom tier opponents, the A-10 are better than the middle and the bottom of Conference USA.
If you're Mason, you better either win against Cincinnati, that Cincinnati game, or that Kansas State game, because then you really don't have marquee opportunities at all.
I don't think they can win at Kansas State.
I don't either. I think Kansas State's darn good, and you have them where I would have them, if not higher.
That was still a good job of them to get that game on the schedule. I think that was something that came out last minute. And then they'll also get either Baylor or Ole Miss, depending on how they do against Cincinnati. So they'll have a couple chances.
David, we have some first-round matchups showing up here. There's Central Florida, Michigan, St. John's, and Loyola, Chicago, last year's Final Four.
Yeah, the Johnnies, you got into the tournament, and yes. I don't know. They did two things last year. They beat Duke away from home, and they won at Villanova, and they didn't really beat anybody else at any point. But I guess, you know, the potential is certainly there. And Loyola, again, there's another team that I like more than them that I don't know if they're going to make your field or not. But I could see the – I mean, obviously they were in the Final Four last year. How can you say that they don't belong up here? I really like this UCF team if they can stay healthy. And, God, wouldn't that be fun seeing them play Florida State?
Well, I think it's noteworthy to point out that St. John's did beat Butler last year without Shamori Pons.
Yeah.
But I think it's also worthy to point out that when St. John's had a full roster against Butler, they also lost by 40-some points at the ankle.
And that's why I have St. John's in. I think that we do get some consistency finally out of them this year, which is why I think they do make the field. And we're getting close to the bubble here. You know, this is, you know, the nine seeds. We're, you know, these are teams that easily could be out. Michigan in there, also another Final Four team, national runner-up last year. It's tough for you to see them not making the field. But again, Joby, I don't think that they're going to solidly be in either.
Right. I agree with that. I think I can't actually disagree. I mean, I know you love the under-radar teams. Just from a realistic standpoint, I just don't see the committee loving under-the-radar teams, except I could see Western Kentucky.
I guess on Loyola, I kind of thinking that they think about what happened last year might, if this Loyola team looks like a tournament team, get them up a few extra seed lines. Just, you know, the memory of, hey, this team was in the Final Four.
They better make their run through the MVC, though. Mm-hmm. You know, or they're in trouble for that.
I would agree with that. They got to run
slip up. I mean, we're talking 1-2 losses sort of thing if they want to be close to wearing white, which is what you have.
Well, given how strong the top of the Valley this year, they might be able to get away with two or three Valley losses if they're going to be somewhat close to an at-large. But you better make hay against teams like Nevada and at least win a game against Maryland at Baltimore if you're going to make that argument.
Yeah, so Rocco, let me show you the 10 line, including the potential matchup for your Washington team here in my bracket. We've got there a second Valley team in Southern Illinois, a second A-10 team in SLU, along with Louisville and USC. Go ahead, rip me apart.
Well, you know, I'm curious why, you know, this is a nitpicky bracket thing, but I'm curious why USC got to be in the West and Washington did it despite Washington being a better seed. But anyway, that would be a big gripe on Selection Sunday if it were to happen.
And it comes to where teams fall on the 7 line versus where teams fall on the 10 line.
So you're just slotting them that way. Okay.
Texas was higher slotted than Washington.
Right.
Well, there you go. Yeah. No, that's fine. Just always curious about that.
Yeah, and Texas is not that bad of a trip to Salt Lake as going to Hartford. So. Yeah,
true. Well, Hartford's a bad trip for Washington, so let's hope that doesn't happen.
They'll get the noon Thursday game.
That would be tough. But, yeah, I like the St. Louis pick at 10. I think they have a schedule that can get them up to 10 if they win or get an at-large in the A-10. I think USC I'm pretty high on. I think I have them as an 8 seed, and I like their roster a lot. It's just going to be a matter of not slipping up and losing – games they're not supposed to. Louisville, I think it might be a little too early. I know they have a great coach, and he's been able to get some good transfers in there for this year. I think they're a year away from making it into the tournament. They could easily surprise.
Or maybe five, depending on what happens.
Right. Yeah, that's always a possibility as well. And then Southern Illinois, very nice team. Team I like a lot. Team I'll be watching a lot. But I don't think – I'm thinking of this year's Valley like 2 years ago when Wichita State had a dominant team. They blew out all the metrics. They were like a top 8 KenPom team, and they still got a 10 seed. I think this year's Valley would be really similar to that year in terms of how the metrics are going to like them. A lot of that more than ever will factor into the net. And I just can't see – if there is two Valley teams, I think they're going to be like an 11 and a 12 or a 12 and a play-in, something like that. But It'd be great to see this come true somehow.
It'd be interesting to see if Illinois State could finally break through this year, if there are going to be multiple Valley teams, because the Redbirds, I think 1998 was the last time they'd actually qualified for the NCAA tournament under no less a guy.
I think the Valley's really good this year. I think it's better than what we're used to seeing. It's certainly better than what we're used to seeing out of under the radar conferences. So it wouldn't shock me at all if they got two teams inside the bubble. In fact, I would predict, and we'll predict now, that both these teams – I don't know if they'll be as high as an 8 and a 10, but I could see them getting two teams inside. I actually like Southern Illinois more than Loyola.
this year.
But I want to do a straw poll among our panel. Do you know who the Illinois State coach was the last time they made the NCAA tournament?
I know they beat Tennessee in the first round, but I can't remember who the coach was.
I'll give you a hint. We named an award after him last year back in March.
Gene Stallings?
Oh, my God.
Kevin Stallings.
Kevin Stallings. It's Kevin Stallings. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Interesting. Joby, let me have your comments on the 11 line. I know you're dying to see who Syracuse gets to lose to.
Yeah. Either that or make the run all the way to the Final Four.
There's Houston, there's Alabama, San Diego State, and Clemson.
Mm-hmm. I actually Alabama I don't see this year.
Really?
Alabama, what do you see in Alabama that can get them even to the NIT? I mean, you know, they lose their best player in Sexton. Their second best player is the sixth man at Virginia. You know, I think Avery Johnson's done an admirable job. But I think Alabama's going to fall off a cliff.
I think the key to the team may be Mac and how Tevin Mack coming over from Texas where he had some problems. But I think they may have the right coach to get him squared away. And that may help make up for the scoring losses that they had.
But, yeah, yeah, and like I said, Avery Johnson can coach. I like what he's brought to them. They were a moribund program, dictionary word of the day. But I think they take a step back this year. I don't see Alabama making a run to the tournament this year. Houston, interesting call. Boy, I don't have any faith in an American team often, you know. It's not named Cincinnati. Yeah, the tournament. I almost picked Q's in that, and then hey, go on Q's, beat an overrated Tennessee team, or a team that not overrated, but a Tennessee team that also sputters in the tournament, and then hey, you get to upset Virginia for the umpteenth time.
But if you're talking about teams that were formerly moribund, I think Clemson may be a little bit underseeded as far as an 11 goes.
Oh yeah.
I think Clemson.
I think Clemson's going to be better than.
I think they're going to be a very, but I could see him as an 11. I mean, the thing is, that's just where the ACC is. I think they're going to make the tournament, but do they fall behind? You know, some of these other ACC teams like Louisville. I think Clemson's better than Louisville, but I could also see a scenario very easily where Louisville, where Chris Mack puts it together quickly and gets ahead of Clemson. We'll see if the bad luck that Clemson seems to – or the dark cloud of luck that seems to follow Clemson around finally breaks in their sunshine.
Well, let me show the next four teams, which are my first four teams. They're in the – should be show coming up here in the South and the West regions if we did this correctly. And I know you all think Marquette better than I do, but I got them against Iowa State, Indiana, and Arizona State. Rocco, your thoughts on my final four teams?
I think they're all tournament teams, mm-hmm. and I like the fact that you have them in the bracket. I think all of them could easily be argued to be higher up. It also could be, I think at least Iowa State and Arizona State could be argued to be out. But I'm pretty high on all four. I think Indiana is got a really high ceiling with Langford and Morgan and the supporting cast. I think. It could be potentially a really, really fun year in Bloomington. I think Arizona State's got a much more balanced roster than last year with the additions of Cheatham and Cherry. I think they're going to actually surprise a lot of people later in the year. I think it's going to take them a couple months to get rolling. And then Iowa State, I like the talent. They've got some injury problems right now. So I think they'll have a little bit of an up and down, but with the strength of the Big 12, it's enough to get them a bid. And then Marquette, I think I have as my second Big East team right now. So certainly like them, and I like them a lot higher.
Of course. I only did that to set up that potential win game if they beat Iowa State against Va Tech.
Yeah.
You see that?
Yeah, you had to do that.
I know you want to see Marquette against Uncle Buzz and Virginia Tech.
Yes.
I think if that happens, keep an eye on Lindell Wigginton from Iowa State, who's poised to have a breakout year.
Yep.
It's kind of hard to believe that Iowa State finished last in the Big 12 last year, but somebody had to in that group of death.
Yeah, and David, I'll show the top four teams that I left out. These are in order. Arkansas, Ohio State, UConn, Davidson. Just your general thoughts now on my field of one through – well, Well, some other teams that I considered as well, but.
Well, you're wrong, and okay. We all know it, and I think you know it too. Last year there were eight teams that were – well, there were seven teams in the top 25 preseason last year that didn't make the field, and there were three teams that didn't receive a single vote that ended up as protected seeds. This is all kind of forecasting. I will say this of the teams you left out. I think I like Davidson the most. I think UConn, their lack of front court is really going to hurt them. I think they're going to get good fast, but they're not good quite this year. I actually like Ohio State a lot too. It wouldn't shock me if they got inside the bubble. I don't understand what you see in Arkansas.
Arkansas, it came down to, quite honestly, this was the Missouri spot here of the next SEC team, because I think the conference is good enough to carry an extra – it will be good enough to carry a team in that may not really be long there. And that's kind of what I was looking at, of mm-hmm. who would that next SEC team be. I'll just throw up the rest of the also considers also. These are 10 more teams that I gave serious looks at: NC State, Iowa, Arizona, Vanderbilt, Illinois State, who you mentioned earlier. Yeah. Providence, SMU, Missouri, Marshall, and New Mexico.
I'm surprised that Providence wasn't strongly in your field.
Okay.
We got a big game. Is it tomorrow or the next day?
Yeah. Is that the roadie game?
Yeah. Or no, yeah. It's who do they open? Who does Providence open with? Oh, Jesus.
I'll pull their schedule up while Jody, if you want to talk about them.
Yeah, no. Yeah. And it's because, remember, they're going to build from last year's team. They got a strong recruiting class coming in. And when you combine it with what they're already a tournament, they already have tournament level capabilities. I actually think they're going to be in the top half of the Big East. I think they're going to be ahead of Xavier. They're going to be ahead of Butler in the standings.
Not much of a schedule there that we're seeing, Joby.
Yeah, I think we're talking about where they are in the standings of the Big East. I think the Big East, you're going to see them. I think I picked them third behind Marquette and definitely behind Villanova. Villanova's going to win the conference by about four games. But
that's
Boston
a fix.
College, you know, will surprise this year. Boston College, I'm not saying they're going to make the tournament, but we will be discussing Boston College's tournament resume at some point in Hoops HD in February and March.
And that's a team that has given Providence fits before.
So. Yeah, that rivalry has a little bit of heat to it. It's not nearly the same as it used to be when it was a conference game, but they've kept it going. Not as much heat as the Roadie series, but Providence BC is a fun game.
Yeah. Cooley really knows. He's really put – I really like what he's done there. And so, yeah, when you combine Hurley and Cooley, I mean, it's kind of like a nice 1-2 punch, you know, of what they did last year.
Chad, there's another team that I really like that isn't in the bracket yet. I think they're going to be. I'm a little curious where Wofford was on your seed list and where they would have been in this group had they not gotten an auto. And I'm assuming you gave them the auto.
I'll show them right there in the East region. They were my 12 seed in the East as the best team right below the first four. So
okay, so you had them ahead of Arkansas.
No. Yeah, well – I don't think I ranked them versus Arkansas. Arkansas wasn't in the field, but they were the best team of the teams that were not within the bubble. But Rocco, looking at the list there of the teams I left out, the teams also considered, maybe even somebody that even leave on the board at all anywhere. Is there somebody that you think is my most egregious sin that we haven't discussed yet?
I mean, we already talked about it on the SEC show. I'm higher on South Carolina than probably anybody.
the nation, yes.
I might be the number one South Carolina.
Angry Frank isn't as high on South Carolina as Rocco.
But I just like the way their schedule sets up. They did an amazing job scheduling this year and obviously playing in the SEC. You look at the top seven in the SEC or maybe even just the top six. I think the top six I think we mostly agree on. After that, there's going to be a team or two that emerges, and they're going to have the games and the opportunities to be comfortably in or certainly have a chance at the last four teams. And why not South Carolina? I think I like Vanderbilt a ton with the two five-star freshmen coming in. Garland, probably be him and Waters be the two best point guards in the league. Garland might be the best pro. So the Vandy's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And then there's also – you know, I'm a little bit higher, I think, than most people as well on Ole Miss, because Kermit Davis was able to get a couple guys to stay, a couple guys to transfer, got Andy Kennedy's commitments from last year to stay committed, which is very similar to what Mike Hopkins did at Washington last year. So I would keep your eye on Ole Miss, too, as a sleeper, dark horse type team.
So
between there's the certainly going to be a sleep.
Between the teams on the board and the teams you've mentioned, we have the entire SEC covered, so that's good at least. Sleeker, let me throw up to you also the same question. Is there anybody else that's on the board here that didn't make the field that you really think is a sin?
I don't know necessarily about in. I mean, it would certainly be notable if Arizona does not make the field, but given the fact that their recruiting is at a pretty much a big snag, it's certainly not inconceivable to see him at this point.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me if Marshall actually got the auto bid out of Conference USA and made Western Kentucky an at-large.
Hey, Chad, I think I missed a glaring one that I just overlooked, but I have Texas Tech comfortably getting in, and I don't think we've discussed them yet.
No, we haven't. They were not on my board. I did not believe that they were going to make the field at all.
Yes, there's a large range of opinions there, but my take is with Chris Beard and the momentum he's built at that program and them getting all the way to the Final Eight last year and playing in the Big 12, I have a hard time seeing them getting and finishing the bottom of that league. I guess we'll see. I think that's what you're saying here.
Yeah, the last time Chad left him out of his preseason bracket was last year, and they got a three.
They've only got two of their top eight scorers back, and I know they do bring Matt Mooney in over from South Dakota, but I'm just not.
I love the Mooney transfer. I'm not saying Texas Tech's going to be wearing white, but I most certainly think they're under consideration, and I think they're going to. I mean, if I were making the field, they would have been in my field, but they definitely being listed. I'm surprised they're not listed.
Well, let me show David my last of my 12 seeds that we didn't reveal there. South Dakota State with Mike Dahlm, one of the best players in the nation, not only under the radar, but any team in the nation, I believe.
Yeah. That's why Chad made Xavier a five there, because he.
Yeah, if those two were to play tomorrow, I would pick South Dakota State all day long. Just so you know, I mean, they are really good. They got a big game, at least by under the radar standards, tomorrow against Grand Canyon. Again, the issue that they're going to run into is opportunities or lack thereof. The Summit League, while good, just doesn't provide them. So are they good enough to land inside the bubble? I think they are. Do I think they will? Maybe, probably not. But if I had to list three or four teams that I thought could do it, certainly Western Kentucky, who you have way up there, and certainly Loyola and Southern Illinois. But I also think Wofford and South Dakota State are very, very good.
And I believe Mike Dahlm would also be on pace for possibly a 3,000-point career if he gets enough games in with the Jackrabbits this year.
Right. And four for four in NCAA tournament appearances as well, should they make it back.
Right, South Dakota State, you kind of have to dig to find them. I mean, we watch them, but, they're kind of not on they're on premium-level networks on television, or their games are streamed. But if you are a fan of basketball, they are a fun team to watch. It's worth logging on or turning in the channel 700 or whatever it is to watch them play. They're really good, and I don't mean that disparagingly. They are a really good team. It wouldn't shock me at all if they got inside the bubble.
Right. Let's run through the rest of the teams here a little bit quicker, but I guess the 13 liner teams that could potentially be in that group as well. I'm a big fan of this Irvine team this year. Rockar, you probably are as well, being a West Coast guy. Long got Northeastern, Georgia State, and Harvard on the 13 line as well.
I think Irvine brings back the best roster in the Big West. I also am impressed with just how well the Big West has turned things around. They hit rock bottom a couple of years ago when I think they were ranked 29th overall out of 32 conferences, according to KenPom's metrics. And now I think they're projected this year to be a top 16 or 17 conference. But the upper half of the league has got a lot of great players. Like Fullerton's got Kyle Allman, and Irvine's got a really good team coming back. Santa Barbara's got a good team. It's going to be a really fun conference tournament, as always, but with a little bit more skill nowadays. And then I like that Northeastern team quite a bit. I'm really excited for Friday. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be in Boston like I originally was going to be, but I was planning to go to watch Northeastern plays at Harvard on Friday night.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. That's probably one of the better games of the night, really.
It is.
Yeah.
And quickly, the 14 line here, I've got Eastern Michigan, Wright State, Grand Canyon, who we mentioned earlier, and Belmont as well.
You have Eastern Michigan and not Buffalo.
I'm leaning Eastern Michigan. I said this during our Under the Radar preview show. I just like them slightly better. I think that the West Clark loss for Buffalo is going to hurt more than people realize. So,
well, Buffalo got a really big game at West Virginia to open the year, probably a little bit over their heads, but
a lot over their heads.
They win that one. Suddenly, he's going to be liking Buffalo. So, Wright State, really good team. Won 26 games a year ago. Have 6 of their top 7 back. Should be as good or better. The Lopes into the field.
trip to Tulsa.
Yep.
The 15 line here. Now we're getting to the bottom of the barrel, really. Joby, I gave you Lipscomb. It's got SFA, Ryder, and Montana on this line.
I like those teams. Those are good teams.
Lipscomb was actually showed some signs of life last year. I actually thought they were pretty, reasonable under the radar team last year. But I really wish we had gotten them last year.
And finally, Salika, let me just show you here the 16 seeds. There's
six of them. Sneaky suspicion. Boo!
Oh.
NC Central, Radford, Lehigh, SFPA, Hartford, and Grambling.
Wrong on that one.
What am I wrong on, Joby?
Well, there is a team from the state of Georgia that I'd like to see in that Grambling spot.
Oh. Mercer?
Or no, not Georgia. Not Grambling spot. The North Carolina Central spot.
Oh, we'll get to that in a second.
NC Central, I think, is the best team in that MEAC.
But there, anything can happen on one game, and I have belief.
I know the biggest flack I might get on that is a pick of Hartford to win the America East over Vermont or UMBC, but
I like UMBC.
Grambling really is who I'd pick to win this whack, so I can't really.
Before I pull the screen down, let me just go through each of you quickly here. Any final thoughts on what you saw here and what I did? Anything either seating wise or team wise that we haven't discussed already, Rocco?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely you threw some curveballs in here, and that was fun, and I enjoyed that because otherwise we wouldn't have a lot to discuss. So thank you. But I'm really curious to see because I can tell by the way that you put this together that you're really kind of forecasting out the season and how you think it's going to play out, and even into the conference championships. So it'd be really fun maybe to do either a part of an episode or a full episode and look back at what we had at the start of the year.
I don't want to do that. I could be so wrong. It's
screenshot time. It's screenshot time.
Right.
So there we go.
And Joby, anything else?
No, I said my piece that you have underrated Mr. Izzo for the last time.
I've underrated him. I've overrated David. Every year I overrate this Auburn team. It's ever since Bruce Pearl's been there.
Except last year when you didn't have them in and they got a protected seat.
Well, I'm back on their bandwagon. Salika, any other thoughts from you on it?
Well, I won't be able to do it this night, but I do want to allude to something that was kind of introduced last year. There was actually something called a college basketball imperialism map that's sort of like the game of Risk, but you got teams that keep winning throughout the year and can actually acquire another team's quote-unquote territory. So who will be college basketball's ultimate champion come April?
I think at the end of the day, it may end up being whoever wins the national championship. I'd be surprised if it doesn't work out that way. And kind of on that note, with that down now, not based on my bracket, but based on your own thoughts here, I want to run through each of you because we're getting toward the end here. I ask you, who do you think will be in the Final Four this year, and who do you think the national champion is going to be? And David, let me start with you. Who are your Final Four? Who's your national champion?
Final Four, I think I like Gonzaga, Kansas a lot. I'm tempted to pick Nevada, although I don't know if they're going to make it all the way to the Final Four. So I would go with two teams that are playing tomorrow, one team that's playing tomorrow, Kentucky. And I really think Virginia bounces back in a big way and gets kind of that monkey off their back and gets all the way to the Final Four. National champion, I'm going to go with Kansas.
All right. Joby, you mentioned Virginia, so why don't I turn to you next?
Yeah, I actually, in a shock, do not have an ACC team in the Final Four. You might see three in the Final Eight, and they all miss. You can't ignore, I think, Villanova, despite the graduations. I think Villanova is still darn good. Phil Booth's 40-plus in the North Carolina scrimmage just shows, yeah, I know it's a scrimmage, but it shows he can take the reins in the leadership. Kansas, everybody talks about Kansas. I agree. Kansas is great. Gonzaga has now – I mean, forget – Mark Few can't win in March. You know, Mark Few is overrated. Not anymore. I think Gonzaga is right there to be able to do it. And your national champion, in a shock, don't underrate the Fighting Tom Izzos.
Michigan State to win it all.
Yeah, you have to go out there.
Yeah.
It's really Kansas, but I have to make my point.
I'll tell you, Joe, I do agree with you, actually. Let me throw mine out here. I do agree with you, no ACC team in the Final Four. I'm going with Kentucky, Kansas, and Gonzaga, no shock there. And because I love to overrate them all years but last year, my fourth Final Four team is going to be Auburn. I want to go with somebody a little bit off the beaten path that has a good team. They've got some injury problems starting the season, but I think they come together by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Make that run.
Well,
but I'm going with Kentucky to cut down the nets at the end of the day.
Okay. What do you think about Auburn's depth? Do you think that they got enough? Do you think that they're athletic enough? Or do they need to hire a big-time strength and conditioning coach like George Mason's Handy Hinduraham?
David, he was on the 8 line. You blew your chance there. Really, really.
I couldn't get that. You were hogging the screen.
Rocco, your Final Four.
Yeah, so this is always it comes with a caveat because I don't want to pick four teams that all end up in the same region at the end of the year. But assuming that my bracket is perfect, I'm going to say that there's a couple almost no-brainers impossible to pick against is Kentucky playing in Louisville in the regional. I have to put Kentucky all the way to the Final Four with that kind of home court advantage. Same with Kansas and Kansas City, although the Huskies did beat Kansas and Kansas City last season. And then my other two regions, I'll go with a little bit of a surprise. I got Tennessee coming out of the Washington, D.C. region. Sorry, I'm looking at a different bracket here.
Right.
And then in Anaheim, I expect a little bit more of a wild card and not Gonzaga. I'll just by default, I think it'll be somebody a little bit more of a wild card. I'll go with Nevada for this exercise.
Okay.
And then in the Final Four, if those were the matchups, I would have Kentucky. I mean, it's probably unrealistic, but playing Tennessee in an all-SEC final and Kentucky winning the title.
Kentucky winning the title. Salika, let me let you finish things off on this question.
I would say I'm going to be confident about Kansas, Kentucky, and Duke making the Final Four. I would also give Tennessee a little bit of an edge over Michigan State as far as that final spot. And as far as who was winning it all, I don't bet against Duke when it comes to playing in Minneapolis, so I think they will make it 3-for-3.
Duke, huh? Kentucky, Kansas, I think they were almost unanimous, though. And I kind of agree with that those two teams are just looking so good heading into the season.
I did not have Kentucky.
You did not have Kentucky other than in your modified version.
Yeah.
but on that note, David, we have one last order of business here before we finish our last preseason podcast, and that is to crown our team of the people for the 2018-19 season. This is an annual tradition here at Hoops HD. We crown a team of the people who we support unconditionally throughout the season. We always go with a team with a unique story, like the Lopes when they were transitional. Cal Baptist in their last year of D2 last season was our team of the people. Yeah. David, who were the finalists this year?
Well, we looked at a lot of teams. We discussed? I think we looked at Chicago State because of some of the trouble that they've had. We looked at Grand Canyon again, just because we had so much fun with them before. Who else? We had some other candidates.
Was Duke on the list?
Duke was on the list, but we decided that the basic guidelines is that they have to be in a unique situation and kind of be under the sight line. And a little bit of history here, Chad, or anybody really that might remember. Sometimes I can't remember exactly how things worked out, but we started it. It was actually like we didn't know what to do with NJIT They were the one and only independent. And when we looked at them, we're like, this team isn't half bad. And we just decided to kind of adopt them as our own Hoops HD team and give them unconditional support. And it was a lot of fun. We were tweeting at them. We were real interactive. It was a big year. They ended up making a postseason tournament. Their fans were great and all of that. And then they ultimately got into the Atlantic Sun Conference. Now, we had absolutely nothing to do with that, but it was kind of fun to kind of follow them. And we were kind of big on NJIT by the end of the year. We were big fans, and we discussed just always making it NJIT. But the second year we went with Grand Canyon, they were a transitional team. We thought they were unique because we figured that despite being a transitional team, they had a chance to finish in first place in their conference or in the top 100 of the RPI, which had never been done by a transitional team, and they did it. And talk about a ton of fun. We still love the Lopes fans, interacting with them. It was – who was it the year – was it New Hampshire the year after that?
Right.
We had some fun with them. We sent them a preseason NIT banner. We bought one of their assistant coaches lunch, had it ordered on the air and sent to his office the next day. Don't know if he ever got it. And last year, like you said, it was Kyle Baptist in their final year of Division II. So we've always tried to have some fun with it. We've had probably our best interaction was with the Lopes and NJIT. But I don't know. Who are we looking at this year, Chad?
Well, David, there is one very unique story out there in college basketball that this year. This is a team that is there's a team out there that is in its final year of Division I play because the administration has decided that they can save a ton of money by dropping down to Division II, where you are still offering the same number of scholarships. You're still offering slightly lower number of scholarships, but the big argument for dropping down to Division II is the cost of giving out these scholarships, which is the cost of giving out something for free. So we don't want to give things out for free anymore. Instead, we'd rather not do that, have less exposure for our school, have less people probably want to go to and enroll in our school. It makes no sense. I think it is a people have done studies. It happened when UAB's football decided to drop football that they said it was for financial reasons. And the studies all proved actually that the finances favored keeping football there. Very similar type of circumstance here. Big dispute here as to how it even came about, whether it was the school itself that decided to drop down from D2 to D1 or whether it was the Georgia Board of Regents who has denied it. I've been in communication with them. They told me, no, it was definitely a school decision. But
so here it is, this year's team of the people, and kind of we've never had a situation like this before. Like Chad said, they are reclassifying to Division II. They've already filed the paperwork to do so. And their stated reasons don't make any sense. They say it's financially driven. Well, I don't understand that, because how can this be financially driven if your number one source of revenue is buy games in football and basketball, and suddenly as a Division II team you're not able to do that anymore, but you still have travel costs? And the one thing that you save money on is scholarships, but that doesn't save the institution money, because it's money that doesn't leave the institution. You don't save $50,000 by not writing yourself a check for $50,000, which is ultimately what a scholarship is. So something is really strange. Now, the stated reason, like when you asked the Board of Regents in an email, was that the school had made this decision. But we have heard otherwise from Savannah, like we're not going to say who, but there's some people close to Savannah State that were actually in the program that are indicating it really wasn't the school's decision at all. And maybe it was. Maybe they decided they want to do this, and if that's the case, then great. We're still going to support them. We still want to send them out with a bang. But there's something fishy going on here. Am I like a conspiracy theorist, or is there something odd about this? They recently transitioned up. I want to say it was 04, 05. They had a really rough transition. I think they were 7-79. But like anything else, they improved over time. They had a first-place finish. They've had some Olympic sports go to NCAA tournaments. Last year, all the way down to the end of the year, they were in the hunt for first place in their division. So what's the problem? Like, why is it – what is this doing to anybody? Is this saving them by going down? And secondly, why, if it wasn't them, were they forced to move down?
Well, and again, like you said, we've heard tell that the school said it was the Board of Regents decision. The Board of Regents has clearly stated it was a school decision. Either way, somebody wants to destroy this program, because you are going to destroy athletics at this school. You're going to hurt the entire school. I know that recently Georgia Southern came in and took over what was formerly Armstrong State in the city of Savannah there, but as a satellite campus. But I don't get it. I think this is a school that is making a huge, huge mistake.
Or somebody is.
So somebody's making a big mistake, Salika, Joby, Rocco, are we ready to hashtag save the Tigers?
Yeah. Definitely.
I like to think we've been doing that for quite some time now.
Right. And again, kind of a big week for them. I know that they're shooting over their heads. They go to Texas A&M this week. They also go to Georgia. If they're able to win one of those games, and I know it's an extreme long shot, we want to do something to put this team in the spotlight, because it is an incredible story. And the more people that hear it and maybe learn about it are going to ask, well, why the hell are they going down? Who made that decision?
Yeah, unfortunately, on the court, that they were a very good team last year. I think they tied for the regular season title in the MEAC, but I just don't see them having the pieces there this year.
They are fun, though. They are fun. They have the highest pace of anybody?
Yeah. They're one of the fastest teams in all of D1. Yeah. All right. So save the Tigers. Get out there and save the Tigers. And if you're a fan of a previous team of the people, the Lopes, NJIT, I know that you probably don't have anything in common with this Savannah State team, but if you enjoyed the kinship and you've enjoyed getting to know us, and I realize that's probably no one, please get behind this team. If you're a fan of UAV football and you remember what that felt like, you kind of feel like this is a program that's being treated the same way.
Yeah, and just a quick note, KenPom preseason has them rated with the number one tempo, the fastest team in the nation. Okay. He also has them rated 331st offensively and 353rd defensively. So they're, in other words, they play no defense. They are lousy on offense, but they move the ball fast.
They move the ball fast,
But on that note, let me run through each of you. Any other final thoughts about anything heading into the season here? Salika, let me start off with you.
I think I had hinted on it a little bit earlier, so now I'll go ahead and get the screen share for what I was talking about. No, not quite that puppet. Not Appalachian. Well, it's sort of, if you want to narrow in on it. A little sliver of North, a little hot sliver of North Carolina, or even our team of the people down here in the southeast corner, but that's already been covered up by Cincinnati, oddly enough.
Okay. That game never even got played, but they got it already. All right.
It was played last year.
Yeah, they played last year.
Joby, how about you?
I think it'll be very interesting to see if we have the issues that befell the Big Ten last year hit another conference, which is basically when we get – and with the increase to 20-game schedules proliferating across, this is not a good thing. Enjoy this preseason because they're going to be shrinking in the number of games. And what I mean by the Big Ten last year is – We had a big three in the Big Ten and a fourth team in Ohio State. After that, the drop to Nebraska and Penn State, et cetera, was so stark that even, and not even just for you, but it's true, who would have ever thought we'd see a 13-5 type Power 5 team not make the tournament? Understand the dark web had a role, David.
Yes.
But the fact is, will there be – with these increased size schedules, that phenomenon will only increase because they won't have the out-of-conference capabilities to build up out-of-conference wins. And so, Big Ten last year goes something in the neighborhood of 4-10 in the ACC Challenge, and that put them behind the eight ball for the remainder of the year. Will we see that that sort of thing continue to grow?
Rocco.
I'm really curious to see a thousand things this year, but I think one of the big ones that I think will be a hot topic will be the net that was just revealed in August, the new metric that's a composite of quite a few factors that the NCAA is going to be using, and we don't really quite know the formula.
We'll know it pretty soon.
And, yeah, and you guys did an excellent job getting David Warlock on to talk about that and get a lot more information out there that we didn't know otherwise. And it's really encouraging to know, by, I think by December, we'll start to understand how that formula works. But I think, I'm excited that they're getting away from the RPI in one sense, but in another sense, I'm concerned that the more and more dollars that go into the business that is college basketball, the harder and harder it is for mid-major. What a mid-major even means, that cutoff line seems to be going higher and higher and higher every year, making even it tougher, the Atlantic 10, Mountain West, AAC even, to get multiple bids. So I'm just curious, because I would really like to see that trend to start come back to be able to have a bracket more like Chad's tonight. And I know, like Joby said, with the 20-game schedules in the power leagues, with the 16 teams, with SEC having 14 teams and ACC having 15 teams, it really cuts down on any opportunities at all. You've probably heard a lot about Loyola Chicago's coach, Porter Mosier, talking about how they called everybody in the Power 5 conferences, Power 6, and couldn't get anybody to take a game with them. So I really hope we start to see some sort of trend go in the opposite direction. Time will tell, but I am excited for the season, and keep your eye on the net.
All right. David, let me let you close things out.
Okay. As always, I'm excited about like the under-the-radar teams, who it's going to be this year. Excited about Western Kentucky, South Dakota State, Wofford. I also like UC Irvine a lot. I also like Wright State a lot. Southern Illinois is another team that's going to be fun, because is someone that does the weekly Under the Radar show, it's one of the things that we're always talking about. I mean, who is good enough to potentially land inside the bubble? As far as the NET goes, the impression I got from David Warlock and from some others was that it was done with a lot of the Under the Radar teams in mind. Now, it wasn't done specifically to aid them, but it was done to try and help identify who some of the better teams were, regardless of what league that they played in. I think that was kind of the goal of it. And I'm not a fan at all of the 20-game schedules, but I do think we are about a year or two away from college basketball adopting a flat 31-game format. You can get to 31 games now if you're playing 4 games in an exempt tournament. There's movement, and I think it's enough movement to where we're going to see it in the next year or two to where it's just a flat 31, where everybody, whether they're in a multi-team event or not, will get 31 games. And I think that will help kind of offset the 20-game schedules, because it gives everyone at least 11 out-of-conference games, and it gives a team like Gonzaga 15 out-of-conference games, and you know some of these under-the-radar teams, it gives them more chances to play hopefully better teams. And well, hopefully they don't take the opportunity to schedule D2 teams. But all in all, that's kind of what I'm looking forward to. The NET, the exact formula isn't known yet, but the variables have been released. And when you have math people like Warren Nolan and a few others, Jerry Palm, they're going to figure it out. I think by the time we're about 15 games in, we're going to know exactly what it is.
Right. Well, I think it's not going to be until like – sometime in December that the NCAA is going to start releasing even the rankings. But yeah, I agree with you. By the time we get to January, people will know how they correlate, and be interesting how they correlate with the RPI.
Unless they really are putting in, you know, this was poo-pooed obviously when we discussed with Ken Pomeroy. But if they really do even have a basic artificial intelligence component, it will be close to impossible for them to, for someone normal math to be able to constantly stay up to speed with what the formula is, because it will be ever changing.
Well, and again, that's why it's going to be interesting to compare those numbers to RPI numbers and to some of the other metric numbers that are out there and see how they compare. And more importantly, see what the committee does with them come March when they release the field. Are we going to see them rely? Well, we're going to see some teams that would not have gotten in the past get in based on a net number. But on that note,
February will be very interesting.
Yep, it will be.
On that note, on behalf of, we got John Sleek over there, Rocco Miller, Bracketeer, check him out at bracketeer.org over there, Joby Fortson, David Griggs down below. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us for this, all of our preseason content. We are as we record this, less than 14 hours away from the start of the season. So enjoy opening day, and we'll be back again real soon.